This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
And good evening to you for Wednesday, July 24th, 2013. My name is Dr. Doug Kelly. I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, Doug. Glad to be here. Another good show tonight.
I'm glad you're here, too. Yes, good. Another good show. We've got a special guest on tonight, Brian Parsons, good friend and one smart guy. We'll get to him in just a moment. We appreciate everybody taking their time to tune into the live broadcast tonight or into the archive. We know it's your time's valuable, and we're glad to have you here. Metaphysical Universe is a weekly service and educational program of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this weekly radio program, we also operate the Metaphysics Institute, a metaphysics school where you can earn your bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees in metaphysics in a variety of specialization areas. We also operate newageclass.com for standalone certificate courses and certification courses. For more information, you can visit those sites, metaphysicsinstitute.org or newageclass.com. Let's do our profession of beliefs, and then we'll get into our program. The spiritual philosophy of MCHS Church is based upon 9 principles of belief. These principles of belief are, number 1, as sentient and evolving human beings, we not only believe in practicing and living by the principle do no harm, but also in the principle of do right, thus enhancing the vibrational level of humanity. Number 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit to ultimately triumph in the face of any dilemma. The answers we seek already exist within us. We invoke and exert the counselor and guru within. Number 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems, and believe the roots of those solutions lie in exploring, understanding, and empowering the human condition. Number 4, we embrace the differences that make all human beings unique, recognizing that we all come from star material and are therefore equal, irrespective of heritage, beliefs, gender, or gender preference. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. Number 5, rather than a supreme being, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. Number 6, we believe the nature of a human being encompasses both a physical and spiritual aspect, and that human consciousness survives the death of the physical body in a coherent fashion. Thus, death opens a new chapter of life and conducts the individual into a higher state of existence. Number 7, we believe in self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will, and that these 3 synergistically create the goal of self-completeness. Number 8, we believe in the value of practical education in metaphysics, metapsychology, and life skills as a means of empowering the human spirit and enhancing the human condition. We maintain an open but grounded mind to potential realities as yet undescribed by science. Number 9, we believe that discovering the true nature of consciousness and human existentialism will ultimately have a positive impact on human evolution and peaceful coexistence. For more information on these principles of belief, as well as MCHS Church, please visit mchschurch.org. So, now tonight we are going to discuss some paranormal stuff. We have special guest Brian Parsons. He's going to discuss and explain his recently developed E4 method of paranormal or anomalous research. Just to give you a little background on Brian, we've known each other for quite a few years, and Brian's been at this quite a while and really knows his stuff. He was a board member for Paranexus when we had the corporation for that, and he continues to do the paranormal news that's in the widget on paranexus.org. So Brian knows his stuff, and I'm very happy to have him here. Brian, thanks for joining us tonight.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. It's good to be on this show. I haven't been on this show yet.
No, you haven't. I don't know why.
Plenty of time on Paranexus Universe.
So oh, yeah.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, and it's nice to have you. I appreciate you taking your time tonight, too, for us. So, as I mentioned, you've been at this a while. So tell us, when did you start, and why are you doing this? Are you crazy?
Actually, yes, I'm certified.
Certifiable, huh?
Yeah, I started kind of by accident, really. A lot of people have this fantastic story about seeing their grandmother appear as an apparition and getting hooked or something similar. But for me, it was actually, I was challenged by a coworker about a local urban legend, and I actually was the skeptic, and I wanted to disprove it. This was back in 1996, and I don't know, a lot of people can't think back that far technology-wise, but we didn't have the internet. We didn't have cell phones. We didn't have smartphones. So I actually had to do something that most people wouldn't even dream of, and that's going into a library and doing actual research with books. And as I was...
Can you explain how that's done?
Well, these big, thick, dusty things that...
no kidding.
Many words in them. But I had to do my research, and during my research, I stumbled upon some names of people who I had known in psychology when I was in high school and in college. And, you know, I was taught parapsychology is pseudoscience. It doesn't give us anything. It's not real, so on and so forth. But, you know, seeing those familiar names, I thought something's going on here. So I read about it, and over time I learned that people were still doing this stuff. And, you know, one thing led to another, and about 6 months later, I was the lead investigator of a paranormal group. And, you know, we started out investigating cemeteries. I know, shame on us. That's what you did. I mean, that's what you did back then. Culture is a lot different now, and that's one of the reasons why I've done the E4 method. 1996, one thing led to another. You know, the group dissolved. I reformed it. A lot of soul searching during those years, and it came time about 2011 when I stopped and I looked back and I realized that myself as an individual, as well as the group itself, really hadn't evolved the way I thought it should. After 17 years or 16 years, the group should have gone in a different direction. We were falling prey to the same things that everyone else is doing, you know, the TV methodology.
Yeah, I was wondering when that was going to come up.
You know, but that's, I got to say it. You know, enthralled in going to abandoned buildings and hospitals and prisons and all those things. And it got to the point where we were so obsessed with doing that that we got into the paratourism, trying to get more money to go out and spend more money on going on ghost hunts. And, you know, my focus was on helping people, helping the client, helping people understand. And beyond that, I wanted to help other groups understand that there's a different way of doing things. And our motto has always been educating the public one person at a time. And a long time ago, I realized that I could help one client at a time, you know, a few a year, however many a year, but I could have a greater impact if I educated other people who had the same interest, other groups, other individuals, because then would pass that on to other people that they met and other clients and so on and so forth. And I was also challenged a long time ago because I was one of those chronic complainers about all these TV shows that are ruining everything and this is wrong and that's wrong. And one of my members at the time stepped up and said, hey, you know what? Either do something or stop complaining. And that was the best advice I ever got because ever since then I've written 4 books on the subject of ghost investigation and have gone off to speak in front of hundreds of people all over the United States, 5 different states, numerous events all over the place, sticking my neck out saying how I feel about this subject. And years ago, people didn't agree with it, but I've seen a major change, a major shift in the ideals and belief systems of people who are in this field. And more people are coming on the bandwagon and realizing that what's done on TV is only done on TV. It's not real. It's entertainment.
Well, that's good.
You know, the paradigm shift will take a little bit longer, but, you know, I'm going to hang in there. Some people have said, hey, you know what, I'm going to wait until these TV shows are gone, then I'm going to come back. I don't know what sense that makes, but.
So well, what is the difference between the TV stuff and what you do?
Well, the TV stuff is about entertainment. It's about the thrill. It's about your own personal experience. And that has been the major, major problem with this. It's not so much what they do, but it's how they do it and how they're putting themselves in the middle of things.
You mean all the screaming and the oh my God stuff? You mean that kind of thing?
Oh, that too. I mean, actually, 1950s, a man named Kenneth Batchador, who some of my work is based on, did numerous experiments with table tipping sessions and realized that increased science as well as increased speculation, as well as the fear or excitement of knowing that something is happening, is the quickest and first way to end things. So people would have understood that in 2004 when Ghost Hunters came out. Not to scream and yell, because you're going to end that connection that you have. It's like slamming the telephone down, basically.
Right.
That connection.
Right.
So I don't think it would make for good TV to do anything different.
It sounds like you are obviously educating the field. I mean, you're writing books, you're developing approaches, and that's one of the things that you bring to the table, and that's a good thing. And I'm glad to hear you saying there's a shift going on, a shift toward, better education, knowing what you're doing more.
You know, I got to admit, though, Doug, I was entertained by some of those shows because I would laugh at them. I thought they were comedies.
Well, that's one take.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. I mean, all the work that I've done and clients that I've helped and other people that I've talked to, and then I watch this stuff on TV, it's like seeing all your hard work and somebody's just, it's like a parody. They're making fun of you.
Mm-hmm.
So, I took it personal for a while, but yeah, it's just entertainment. And the good news about those shows is they're getting even more ridiculous, which is great, because then it creates that separation of fact and fiction. And I think a lot more people are really understanding that, hey, you know what, this really isn't real. You know, what we're seeing here isn't real life. It's scripted. You know, I think shows like The Kardashians and The Housewives of wherever, people are understanding that this stuff is just, it's scripted entertainment.
Well, let's talk about your E4 method. Tell us what it is and how it came about, and let's talk about any experience you've had using it or successes.
Well, it's a really a blend of a lot of different things. When I realized that my group was not going in the direction I wanted it to or where I felt it was going, there was a lot of, how the group thing goes, a little internalizing and difficulty. And, nobody wants to end something that they're comfortable with, that I was having fun. It was good times, but I felt like I was cheating myself. I felt like I was standing in two places at the same time, and where I wanted to stand really wasn't where they were going. So unfortunately I had to make that decision to end that relationship and move on and start getting my research done, my work done. It wasn't something that I just started when I ended the group. This was something that I had been kind of slowly working on over the last, probably 3 or 4 years, or even longer before that. Even 2006, when I reformed the group after about a 2-year hiatus, it was on my list of things that I had wanted to do, was to take what I've learned and take what I started with and go back to the beginning, which was using the parapsychology method, which is allowing reenactments and, stepping out of the center of things, which TV glorifies. But like I said, it's a group, it's a lot of different areas, a grouping of different techniques. And one of the things that really pushed me over was the skeptical edge. We talked with Benjamin Radford, and he wrote the book Scientific Paranormal Investigation, and I wrote a blog about that. And a lot of people had emailed me and commented to me about that blog. They're like, this is great. I like the information. I do agree with it, but this is what we're not supposed to do and how we're not supposed to do things or what we're not supposed to do. But what are we supposed to do? So the E4 method is basically a how-to of getting around the skeptical viewpoint, which is correct. Everything that he said is spot on, and we're doing a lot of things wrong. But it also brings in parapsychology, not the parapsychology that sits in the laboratory and guesses and uses statistics and things, but more or less field work, which is obviously highly subjective. But what I'm trying to do is bring some objectivity into it while taking ourselves out of that equation and allowing the client to be the center of attention, which they should be. They're the ones that are having the issue. They're the ones that already have that connection. So we should utilize that a little bit better. Also using a lot of psychology, a lot of things that I really don't have time to get into, like body language and interviewing skills. Use a method called the cognitive interview, which is really deep process of extracting information, not to see if they're lying or not, but just to make them remember. Get the most out of the interviews, because the interview is the basis for everything that comes next. And I also used the ghost excavation methodology pioneered by John Sable, who's been a guest on Paranexus Universe in the past. His techniques of basically digging into history, digging into the past vertically instead of horizontally, which is essentially what ghost hunters do, walking around with EMF detectors, asking questions, presenting themselves as 21st century investigators instead of identifying with cultural words or names or different things that these people would associate with. You know, we just walk in there and with our fancy black t-shirts on, with our acronyms on our chest and our cool tools and our little headlamp on, flashlights in the dark, things like that. But so all these things combined create the E4 method. It's essentially, when I had all these things sitting in front of me, I thought, I have to do this in a method, not to be mean, but to do it in a method that a new group can understand, that a young group or inexperienced group, a group that doesn't know much about science, can really follow and understand, but also something that could be flexible so that people can take it and mold it and shape it, and take it as their own. This isn't the end-all, be-all. It's not 100% complete. I don't think anything really is in science until we have answers, of course, in this field, but I'm not done with it. It's ever evolving. Now, if I were to say that this is complete, then I'd be a liar.
You can always tweak and adjust and develop. So let's talk about what the four different words are. The first one's eliminate, right?
Yes.
So what are we eliminating?
We're eliminating the subjective approach, and essentially that's us being the center of the investigation. It makes no sense scientifically to put yourself in the middle of an investigation. It's highly subjective. You can't see outside of what you're doing. If everyone's sitting there and trying to communicate or trying to be a part of that investigation, you've already created a major faux pas of science by doing that. And again, it's difficult to do field work without some subjectivity. It's going to happen. It's impossible to be completely objective, even if you were to put a house inside of a concrete wall or something. You're still going to have things that affect it.
Yep. Okay, good. And then the next one is establish. Establish what?
Establish better controls. What we're doing with the E4 method is we're creating a replay of events, not a reenactment. A reenactment is kind of a loose term where you're, I don't want to say mocking, but kind of play acting for entertainment. So this is a replay of events. From the interview, we gather information specific about that person's experience, and we replay that experience. And when we replay that experience, we're looking for the specific thing that happened to them, the specific spontaneous event. So we're not worried about if they saw a shadow. We're not worried about collecting EVPs. We're not worried about noises. We're not worried about knocks. We're not worried about drafts. We're not worried about anything but what that person saw. So there we're creating we can create controls based on what we're looking for.
Okay.
If it's a shadow, then you monitor, what's creating shadows in the hallways or the lights or whatever. So, you can focus on that, because ghosts, as we know, create all kinds of phenomena, whether it's a cold breeze or a knock or a touch on the shoulder. It's really hard to control all that. I mean, you have to control the entire universe just to create a control for everything. So if we focus on specific things, we can a little bit more easily control those types of things that would affect that.
Okay, good. And so then the next one is enlist.
Enlist in the army, because it's important.
Be all that you can be.
Be all that you can be, yes. Enlist. Enlisting the client. I mentioned this before. The client, they're the ones, they're the reasons why you're there. And no matter what you do, they're going to be there after you leave, hopefully, unless you scare them out of their house. So it's important that they become involved. All too often I go to cases and somebody will say, well, you know, we're having this, this, and this happen in the bedroom. I got to watch American Idol, so go ahead and do what you need to do. I'm going to be sitting here on the couch watching TV. And I'll be honest, it's happened more than once. And it's kind of weird. It's a weird feeling to have that happen. But bringing them in and enlisting them in, they're going to replay what happened to them. Not just once, not just twice, multiple times. And there's kind of a buildup of sorts that we do. A couple of different phases within that particular phase. And they're going to reenact it, and they're going to have the same things happen, hopefully. And a lot of people will say, well, that's kind of mean. You know, don't you fear for their safety or think that something bad can happen? Well, again, we're creating controls. We're there. We're not just videotaping this and hiding in a corner. We're right there with them the whole time, and we're coaching them through the process, and we're – you know, more or less holding their hand. You know, we wouldn't make them do anything that they don't want to do. And we can even substitute an investigator for them if necessary. But obviously the connection is there with the client. So it's imperative that we would use them for that. And something I've done this before. This is part of a parapsychology method, although we go a little bit deeper now. It's good for the client because it does provide them with a little clarity of what's going on, a little ease and a little bit of comfort. And it does empower them over what's happening. And that's really the bottom line. The real secret with dealing with ghosts and dealing with all these situations is empowering the living. Once you empower them, 9 times out of 10, whatever's going on will stop. That's good, but it's also bad for a researcher. But it's good for the client because that's
Amen.
Essentially that's what you're there for. You're there to help people, bottom line.
They're taking their power back.
Right.
Which is the panacea for everything.
Yeah, because they're scared, they're frightened, what we don't understand, we fear. And once they understand it and they can deal with it, the fear subsides.
Knowledge cancels fear.
Yes, so we're enlisting them and we're helping them at the same time. And they're helping us. They're helping us gather the research and information.
Okay, and then the last E is engage.
Engage. That's a Star Trek thing.
Yeah, engage.
This is probably... next to eliminate, this is probably the most controversial part of this whole entire process. When we're going through this process of doing these replays of events, we're actually not trying to contact the ghost. I know that sounds strange, yeah. But what we're trying to do is we're connecting with the environment. Because the person is not necessarily connecting with a ghost, but they are connecting with their environment. Due to the way that they're going about their business. And parapsychology, obviously a ghost or apparition is the survival of bodily death, but that transference of information happens because of the environment. And for us to just jump ahead and try to communicate with ghosts and assume that these are ghosts or assume that there's nothing else in between, it's kind of putting the cart before the horse. So if we engage the environment and focus on that environmental aspect, then, you know, potentially we'll have that ghostly interaction or the apparitional, you know, connection or even a haunting, which is another strange thing. If you get 10 ghost hunters in a room and you ask them, you know, what's the most common type of event or ghost that you connect with? You know, you give them a choice, an apparition, a haunting, or a poltergeist. A majority of them will more than likely say a haunting, residual activity, it's a replay of events. But then you ask them how they go about their investigation methodology. And, we go in and we have our recorders and we start asking questions. Is there anyone here? anyone like to speak to us?
Those are mutually exclusive.
Well, those are also dealing with communication and intelligence, which is an apparition, not a haunting.
Right.
So why would they assume that it's a haunting based on percentages, based on the fact that it happens more often than not, but we're going to approach everything as an apparition. With the E4 method and with approaching the environment, we can connect with anything all at the same time. We don't have to alter our methodology. We don't have to ask questions or speak a certain way or play act something in the past, because we're going to connect with everything all at the same time, hopefully.
I am so excited about this. You know, earlier when I asked, you know, what do those people do versus what you do, entertainment value in the shows or not, they always go in to find a ghost. And what you're doing is going in to feel the environment.
Well, and some people say, well, isn't the ghost, shouldn't that be your goal? And, well, yeah, I mean, obviously we want to add some value or proof to that. But in order for us to validate something scientifically, it has to be repeated. So the ultimate goal is a predictable, repeatable, spontaneous activity, something that happens. I can bring in a skeptic. We mentioned Benjamin Radford. I would give Benjamin my outline and say, this is how we contacted it. This is our notes. This is what was said and what was done. Feel free to repeat it. And if we're contacting or, you know, using these controls and trying to interact with the environment, you'd have a lot better chance of having something happen again versus, you know, just a random ghost or right. Assuming it's a ghost.
That's well, very exciting. It makes sense what you're saying, Brian.
Thank you know, goodness.
Well, to me it does, because being sensitive to these kinds of things, you know, and I do myself try to avoid going to talk to people's ghosts, because usually what I tune into is just residual energy.
Right.
You know, that's what I get most of the time. And what you're doing is starting from a square one, something that there's an energy signature of some kind here, which will likely be there. Like if it was there yesterday, it's likely there today, but a
right.
ghost may not be.
I mean, think about it too. You know, these ghost hunters come into this location using their tools and asking their questions. But how did these events start in the first place? The client was there living their life, doing their routine, doing what they normally do. They weren't doing anything out of the ordinary. They weren't running around with a headlamp on their head and their black shirt asking weird questions with light-up gadgets. You know, they were living their life. So that's what we're doing. We're reliving their life in that particular point in time in which these events happen. To me, that makes perfect sense. It's common sense, really. If something happened when this happened, why not do that again and see what happens?
So you're creating a reenactment of sorts to try to elicit the same phenomena.
Correct.
There's a question in the chat room from Camille. How often are these investigations simply center around people behaving, acting hysterically with no real foundation for paranormal events? And how often are you finding the real thing?
Well, with the E4 method, I've only conducted, I'd say, about 5 actual investigations that really got anything valuable. And getting anything valuable doesn't necessarily mean we had something spontaneous happen, but I get information or evidence from that. Yes, we deal with living people, and living people can over-exaggerate, can get a little excited, but that's why we do an interview, and we dig into their interview, we dig into their events that happen to them, but one of the phases that we deal with is the second phase after the interview phase is called the physical investigation, and a physical investigation is basically going in looking for potential logical solutions. And this isn't just limited to physical things. This is also dealing with mental things. It's also dealing with drug abuse. It's dealing with anything. Anything and everything goes. You know, we tell them that up front. You know, we're dealing with, you know, physical things, EMF exposure, even shadows or anything that we think feel that could contribute to what they saw or what they heard or what they experienced. but also looking at them as individual people. You know, are they on the up and up? Are they completely nuts? You know, do they have a history of mental illness? What kind of drugs are they taking, you know, legal or illegal? You know, what kind of side effects do those have? Do they have a history of epilepsy in their family? I mean, we ask a lot of tough questions, and, you know, we'll be honest and upfront with them if they're honest and upfront with us. So it's a give and take. You have to assume that they're going to act okay during the exercises.
Do you find that people are honest in their answers with you, Brian?
Honest is a double-edged sword kind of word, because they're honest in their experiences. What they thought they saw, they thought they experienced, is real to them. But when we can show them that it's more than likely not, that's when they get hysterical, and that's when they behave bad and take things out of context. But because people, when they experience these things and they take the time and effort to contact somebody and say, hey, look, I have a ghost problem, they don't want to hear you say, well, you know what, we found a handful of logical solutions, we're going to reenact that, and what do you think? Does this explain what you saw? And of course they're going to say no. So they believe they've bought into their own personal experiences no matter what anybody can tell them. So sometimes they do lie to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And they get carried away with their beliefs and what happened to them. And that's all something that we talk about. I mean, I used to be like, I'd keep all my cards in my hand and I would wait for them to do something and toss down a card. Well, I find it a lot easier now if we just sit with them and talk to them. Here, you know, this is what clients will typically do. This is what some people do. This is what we encounter. That upfront and honesty really, really helps things progress. And a lot of groups will come in and try to be all coy and secret, like, we know things that you don't know, and we're gonna fool mm-hmm. you. And that's just really not the right way to do things.
No.
You know, I've found that when people have called me up to tell me that they have a ghost in their house, that is one of my first questions. I say, don't be offended. I'm going to go through a little list of questions here. Do you do any drugs? Are you on any kind of medication? Because I'm not saying that there isn't something there, but it can be magnified, you know, at certain moments. And then it does tend to calm them down a bit. But, you know, again, that these are really important questions to ask people. I'm so excited to hear you say that, Brian.
Well, it's I always tell people, too, it's you've assumed that there's something paranormal here. In order for us to know what paranormal is, we first have to establish what normal is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, baseline readings.
Well stated.
Some groups will say, well, you know, we did a baseline reading of our EMF detector for 2 minutes. Well, that's not long enough. When we're talking tools and technology, you're talking a long time under a lot of different conditions to actually establish baseline readings.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're dealing with people, it's pretty simple to get a baseline reading on a person. The secret is get them to talk about themselves, and you'll find the real truth.
Good points. There's another question, too, in the chat room. I don't know if you have an opinion or an answer on this, but I'll throw it out there. Danny asks about, we hear about this stuff, this paranormal stuff in the U.S. and Europe, but what about Africa and Asia? Any thoughts on that question?
Well, when you're talking Africa, they have some really, really heavy belief systems that differ from what we believe here. I think not too long ago, somebody was actually murdered over their beliefs in ghosts and the paranormal. So it's a whole different culture. It's a whole different belief system. Europe is a little bit more in line with what we believe, although it seems to me that they're a little bit, I don't know, a polite word to say, a little bit a little bit more willing to run with some of the crazy things that
fringy.
are in our, yeah, fringy, that exist in the belief systems. And we here in the United States are a little bit more focused on the technology aspect, where they're a little bit maybe the folklore, you know, full moons and
singing, dancing naked
like
around the campfire.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Cool. Let's go to Europe. All right.
It works,
just kidding.
Yeah. Bring your matches.
Now, Brian, you, you're not just into this one aspect of anomalous research, you also have interest in other areas as well, isn't that true?
Oh, it's very true. Actually, this summer I went on an excursion with the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society.
Cool.
In western Pennsylvania, and had a blast. Now, I've been following these guys for a while.
Who did you go with? I'm not remembering the name, but he was on our Paranexus program years ago.
Eric.
Yeah, Eric. I'm going to go find it. You keep talking.
I can't remember his last name.
That's because I ask you about it.
Right, yeah.
It's the way the mind works. I'll go find his last name. You tell us about your expedition.
It was interesting. I had wanted to get into, maybe not necessarily Bigfoot stuff, but cryptozoology in general was an interest I had even as a kid. It was the first strange, fringy thing that I believed in. And
Altman,
yes.
Sorry, Eric. Nothing personal. I can't remember my own last name either. Something like Smith or Parsons.
Jones? Okay.
Yeah.
But we spent 2.5 days out in the woods roughing it. I camped out. Some people stayed in hotels. Not me. I'm an avid outdoors person. I like backpacking, hiking, nature. Some people get freaked out when they're out in their own backyard, but I like being out there. And so I just felt to me this was a natural progression, something I need to get into. And being freed up from running a group, you can do a lot of things that you didn't have time to do, you know, in years past. So this is something I really wanted to do. Eric invited me out and spent a couple nights in the woods. I had some really interesting experiences. And like I said, I decided to join the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society because they're very like-minded. They don't they don't fool around. They do their work. They dig into things before they make any kind of public comment, because the whole Bigfoot field is all about getting that story and getting that news story up on your blog and getting all the attention and hits on your site. But they do their work, and they'll dig through stuff before they make any sort of comment, and they certainly know their things when it comes to Bigfoot. I mean, I'm kind of a big cat person myself. I'm interested in trying to validate the existence of cougars. I'm sorry, I should say panthers or pumas. Every time I say cougar, I get people thinking I'm saying something else. But it's an interesting concept. If you can validate that there's a 250-pound, 6-foot-long creature that people say do not exist in the woods, that kind of goes a long way with helping to validate Bigfoot as well. Mm-hmm.
You said you had some interesting experiences there on your weekend. Care to share anything, Brian?
Well, what we did was we had several groups broken up. On our last night is really when all the fun and excitement happened. We were broken up into, I think, about 4 or 5 different groups. We were separated by about a quarter to a half mile, depending upon the size of the group. We all kept in contact with walkie-talkies, and we were the furthest south group, and during one of the members was there. He was doing all the howls and yells, you know, that you see on TV, trying to get some sort of response. And at one point, we heard a rapid succession of extremely loud knocks. It was fairly close to us, but just a little bit south of us. And there isn't a house, isn't a road at least 2 to 3 miles in that direction. Cool. And we all just froze, and we're like, that's really interesting, because that's exactly, you know, the kind of response you typically get. And that same night, a few hours prior to that, I was walking on a path by myself and spent the whole weekend looking for tracks. And, you know, when you're walking in the woods, you can't walk like you do in city streets, you know, just looking around. You kind of have to glance down every now and again to make sure you're not going to trip over something, as well as looking for footprints. You know, we're looking for bear tracks or coyote prints, or, you know, cougar or even Bigfoot tracks. And I saw a strange shape in the ground that I thought was a footprint. Got all excited. I bent down, I looked, and it was just basically pareidolia. It really wasn't anything. But I was still a little excited. And I walked a little further, and I found another print that I immediately thought, no, that can't be what I think it is. And I bent down, and I felt the heel impression, and I felt some slight toe impressions. And I thought, oh, my goodness, this can't be what I think it is. And
Did you get a cast?
I kind of froze, and I was staring at this thing. I took some pictures, and I ran back to get the PBS guy and brought him back, and he's looking at it. He's like, very well could be a track, but it was very old and weathered, if it even was a track. I'm not saying it was a Bigfoot track. You know, it could have been somebody naked in the woods for all I know, or it could have just been randomness just put together, pareidolia. But whether it was or wasn't, it was still extremely exciting to me, and it was a real big thrill to have potentially found something like that. So that was like a really shining moment for myself as a researcher and as an investigator, to be out there and to find something that could have been, might have been. But it's inconclusive as far as I'm concerned. But it's, again, it was still really exciting.
That's good. There was some question I was going to ask you, a point I kept wanting to bring up, and now it's lost. It's lost out in the ether.
You know, where I live up in Canada, in BC, it's apparently a lot of sightings up here. And but the only thing I've come close to is a bear a quarter mile away, according to the neighbors. So I'm staying home.
Yeah, bears are pretty. They're more scared of you. I know people say that. Yeah, like, heck no, you don't know me. I'm scared of bears, but they run off. I mean, they're very timid. And usually, unless people are feeding them, that's a whole different story. But I see somebody in the chat room saying they lived in Washington for 4 years. I was actually in Washington last year. It's gorgeous. It's beautiful. Actually, I want to move there after being there just one time. Been to Florida 30, 40 times. You can keep the humidity. It's all yours, Doug.
Oh, darn. I was going to send it up to you guys.
But no, it's nice in Florida, but it's beautiful in Washington. And yeah, my wife and I fell in love with it. And, you know, I stumbled across a lot of really good books and a lot of reference material up there for Bigfoot. And I was really excited to see that and to get out into those woods, because that's the number one state. It's the big state up there for Bigfoot sightings.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
So you know, Ohio is in the top five, as is Florida.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
So where do you see yourself going from here, Brian? I mean, what's on the agenda here?
You just took my question, Doug.
I'm sorry, Vicky, go ahead.
That's good.
Well, I'm probably going to bed after this.
Well, where can people get a hold of your literature, your books, and you, or, you know, and so are you available to people, like, what?
Well, I'm available for speaking engagements, for answering questions. I mean, anything and everything.
Well, state your website.
My website, briandparsons.com. It's with an I, briandparsons.com. On there, you can find all kinds of links to everything I'm involved with, from the Paranormal News Insider to my ghost group, to my blog on Paranexus Anomalous Research.
Can people buy your books online at your website?
Yes, I have links to my books. They're also available at lulu.com. That's lulu.com. All four of those books are available. And I also have a book in the works, speaking of which, where I'm going. I've been working on this one for a couple of years, and it's kind of fitting that I've joined the Bigfoot group, because I'm going to do a book very similar to my first book, which is dealing with the Handbook for the Amateur Paranormal Investigator. This one is the Handbook for the Amateur Cryptozoologist.
Cool.
Ah.
So it's along the same lines, but out in the woods dealing with strange creatures. And it's been a lot of work to write this, but I'm really excited to get this out. And I think a lot of people are really going to enjoy it. It's a different take on it, but I'm not being over the top of belief. I'm going to leave it to the reader to figure out what's going on for themselves.
That's one thing I like about you, you know, is that you're not just the thrill seeker type. You're actually trying to make a difference in this field, and not only that, you think for yourself, you develop these concepts, and that's just that's rare. So good for you, and keep up the good work on that.
I appreciate what you do, Brian, and the manner in which you do it, because I think you're one of a kind, to be honest. You know, your approach to it, I mean, we can go to IMHS and get all the, you know, the Doug Kelly take on things, and it's the, you know, the metaphysical school, and it's, no offense, Doug, you know what I mean, because I love IMHS and MCHS, But for Brian to, you know, actually be out there in the field and teach people, like, who are asking for help, I mean, and your approach to it, I think, is really commendable, because it takes, I think, a little bit of balls to stand your ground, to be honest.
Well,
yeah, like
put,
I said,
Vicky.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Like
can
I
we
said
back
years
up?
Ago, I'm sorry, I keep cutting you
no,
off.
You, no, you go ahead, Brian. I'm just cutting you off.
He's giving me a hard time, Brian.
Years ago, you know, if when I first started, if I would have stood up and said, what we do is wrong, we need to do it a different way, I would have been stoned out of the out of the field completely.
Yeah.
Even 5 or 6 years ago, you know, people would snicker and sneer or get up during a convention and walk out of the room and didn't bat an eyelash. It just kept talking about what I believe in. And like I said, there is a shift. You know, there is, when I speak, a lot more people are more positive, reactive about what I say. And when I first introduced this, which was in June of last year, I got an invite in January of 2012 to come to John Sable's first Forensic Ghost Excavation Congress Convention. That's always a mouthful to say. In Brunswick, Maryland. And this is a group of like-minded people. These are people that want to break boundaries and don't care about the status quo and just want to do research and go against the grain. Not for the sake of going against the grain, but just to find answers a different way. And there was a speaker there whose name is George P. Hansen. And he's not a household name, but I recognized him. And I thought, I know who this guy is, but I'm not sure where I heard his name. Well, I looked him up, and lo and behold, he's written several articles that I have on my shelf from the American Society for Psychical Research journals. So I was extremely nervous and excited to stand up and speak in front of a professional, somebody who's worked in parapsychology labs. I think he's worked at the Rhine Research Center for 5 years, and I forget where else for a couple of other years. So he knows his stuff. And for me to stand up there and I kind of said some bad things about parapsychology, but I spoke the truth. And, you know, as I saw him sitting there nodding with his fingers on his chin, it was good, because he had drilled a couple of speakers before that. He'd asked them some tough questions and put them on the spot. And I was waiting, but it never happened. And probably one of the best things that I've ever had happen as a public speaker was I saw him put his head down and write in his book. Mm-hmm. That was exciting for him to take notes. And
that's
he pulled
good.
Me aside after that and said, you know, what you're doing is you're in the right direction. You're on the right path. Keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that we need. And, you know, I was blown away. Here's a guy who's been there, done that, telling me that I'm doing the right thing. And he's excited
for
me.
Yeah, but that's who you are, Brian, you know.
But it still takes a lot of courage. And, like, I have a new hero. No offense, Doug.
I'm devastated. And what was that about the door? Never mind. Okay, Brian.
No, Brian. Congratulations! Well, congratulations on your journey and
thank you.
And what you are doing. Because I mean, you're just a groundbreaker, and I can't wait to see what you're going to do next. That's the exciting thing I think about BrianDParsons.com. Everybody, you know, it's going to be exciting to watch you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Doug, you'll always be the great Dogu to me.
Yeah, I inadvertently misspelled my name once, and now I'm the great Dogu, D-O-G-U. Actually, that was it, because there was actually a god or goddess back in the day. It's probably who I reincarnated from. So, but anyway, Brian, you're doing great, always are, and you always got your head screwed on straight there. And think for yourself, and you keep up the good work, and we'll talk more about perhaps seeing you in May, huh?
Oh, definitely. I'm more than likely will be there.
That's
sure.
Great, because we're talking about the conference coming up next May for MCHS Metaphysics Conference and Graduation Ceremony. And, of course, Brian's enrolled at the school, and we'll, I'm sure if you come, we'll be graduating there too, and along with a bunch of other students. So if you're a student listening to this program, and you haven't looked at the information on the graduation ceremony conference coming up, it's on the websites at IMHS, metaphysicsinstitute.org, MCHSchurch.org, and it's in the student forum as well. And check into that information and register as soon as you can. if you're not a student, or if you're a student who's not going to graduate but you'd like to come, there you can do that too. This is open to MCHS church members, invited guests, students, and invited guests. If we have room next spring, we'll open it up to the public. But right now, this is for MCHS church members and IMHS students. And it will be a great program. Friday night, we'll have a meet and greet banquet. Gregory Kent's going to be doing a table tipping demonstration. That's fascinating. Saturday, we'll have our conference. We'll have about 10 different presentations. And then Saturday night, we'll have our graduation banquet and ceremony. And so it's going to be a great opportunity for students and members to, you know, rub shoulders with like-minded people. It'll be fun. It'll be a great time. So check into that. Vicki, before we cut out of here, last week I had wanted to ask you a question regarding tarot and how students can use that in terms of a career or metaphysics practice. And I wanted, I mean, you're doing that. You're combining it with spiritual counseling. That's a tool for you. And I just wondered if you'd take about 60 seconds and just comment on how you use tarot as in your practice.
Well, I was doing readings long before I used tarot, Doug, and I came across tarot, and it was just a relationship. So to me, it's your tool. It is, and you know, very often, I got to say, clients prefer that there's a tool. I like using the tool because it also distracts their attention from me, so I can tune in better. You know, if people want to make a career of this, I mean, it's possible. I've been doing it 40 years, so you got to be in it for the long haul, though. You got to weather the, you know, the ups and downs and the new trends that come along, and you know, no matter what, you're going to be working with people. So anybody can read cards, but are you truly a reader who incorporates the counseling to help individual people? So, you know, it's a big commitment when you do it, and I always recommend have a different kind of income. Always have a different sideline. You got to be able to balance it out. And being self-employed, that's just wise anyhow.
All right, folks, we appreciate you joining us. We extended the program just a little bit. Brian can be really long-winded at times.
Just kidding him, Brian.
Brian, thanks for being with us tonight. Really appreciate it, my friend.
Thank you, Doug and Vicki.
Best of luck to you. And to everybody listening, thanks for joining us every week. And tell others about it, about the program, about MCHS Church and IMHS, if it resonates with you, we really appreciate it. Till next week, encourage you to listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Thank you.